Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello and welcome along to the latest episode of the Manchester is Red podcast from the Manchester Evening News. I'm today's host George Smith and I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by my colleague Tyro Marshall this very sunny Monday morning. Ty, how are you?
Yes, good. Thank you, George. Very good. The sun was definitely shining on United yesterday, wasn't it?
It most definitely was. And that is, of course, the headline topic in this podcast this Monday morning. Manchester United through to the FA Cup semi-finals after an incredible, historic victory over Liverpool at Old Trafford on Sunday. 4-3 victory in extra time. A truly stunning afternoon that we're going to reflect on in this podcast. We're going to dive deep into the individual performances of that showing, the overall showing, what's next for United, what's to come, and much more as well. But there is, of course, the only one place to start, and that is with an overview of that victory at Old Trafford on Sunday afternoon. Ty, I don't think any adjective could do it justice. It was a truly stunning afternoon and an afternoon that I can't recall seeing Old Trafford like in a long, long time.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and it certainly ended up that way. It was, you know, I mean, it defies belief, really, looking back on it. It's, you know, normally from a win like this, especially at the start of an international break, just to frame it in terms of like what we do, if United lose a game like that at the start of an international break, you think, God, no idea what we're going to write about for 2 weeks. They win a game like that, and you're normally like, right, there's loads of ideas there. But I sort of looked at it this morning, and I thought, I don't feel like there is loads of ideas there, because it was just so unhinged. Like, I mean, Bruno Fernandes isn't going to play centre-back at Brentford. Antony isn't going to play left-back. You know, the things that led to it, it's complete one-offs. It was completely bonkers. It was totally off its head, and it kind of makes it, you know, there are... As a win, it was incredible. As a game, as a moment, it was incredible. As a momentum builder, it's incredible. But it didn't really give you anything going forward because, like I say, the system they ended up at was just completely crazy. Extra time was incredible. It's easily forgotten now, but even, you know, watching bits of it back this morning, I mean, that second half was so bad until the 85th minute. And they weren't in the game in that second half at all. And strangely, I watched most of that second half and kind of from half an hour onwards, and I thought they looked knackered. I don't understand why they look so tired, because they couldn't get on the ball. They were being outrun by Liverpool, and you just thought they all looked knackered. And then suddenly in extra time, they didn't, and they just kept going. And that's just what made it so bizarre. You know, you watch most of that second half, and while it's 2-1, you're always thinking there's a chance. But on the balance of that game, you just thought it's hard to see where that chance comes from. And then suddenly it does. And I mean, they could have won it in normal time. They did eventually win it in extra time. And yeah, it just turned into one of Old Trafford's great days.
It was. I'm sure we've all seen countless videos of the celebrations after Ahmad's winner. And the one that particularly gets me is the one where somebody, I think, working for the FA Cup's official Twitter account is filming from the other end of the pitch.
Yeah.
And you just see the Stretford end just blow up with people flying everywhere, celebrating the goal. And That's something, obviously, we've not seen at Old Trafford for a long, long time, aside from a couple of junctures last season, perhaps against Barcelona being one. This feels like it's got to be a turning point and potentially a glimpse into the future that Sir Jim Ratcliffe wants as well.
Yeah, it was Old Trafford at its best, wasn't it? Like you say, the video of those celebrations. I mean, the limbs on the Stretford end were from that angle at the other end was absolutely incredible. And you'd like to think it would be a turning point. I mean... The issue is there's been other days like this year where you think that's a turning point, and it hasn't been. And like I said, you know, the way they played, the way they set up in extra time, that doesn't make it to the one, because Fernandes isn't going to play centre half again. I mean, an unbelievable effort to do so when he clearly, you know, he just couldn't walk. He was on one leg. And, you know, we've said it so many times, his, whatever you make of him. And there were times before that where you thought we're seeing the worst of Fernandes here in that game. There were moments where he was losing his calm and losing his head and complaining a lot. And then he does something like that where, you know, United have had so many injuries this year, and you know, there's a bigger issue there to look at. I'm sure a lot of them have been problematic. But Fernandes, again, has not been one of them, never missed a game through injury. And he just plays, as Ten Hag said already, he plays through the pain barrier. And it was a heroic effort. And yeah, you would like to think it's a turning point now. They're still such a hard team to look at and analyse, because, I mean, it's still now only two defeats in 2024, and we're into mid-March. You know, they've only got one game left in March, and one of those was away at City. It is a good run of form now. You have to say it's a good run of form. The performances haven't been brilliant, as heroic as they were in extra time yesterday. Like I say, the second half would be a concern, because it just felt flat and a bit lifeless, really. And until the goal, and maybe you can say it worked, staying in the game worked, but, you know, I think Liverpool wasted a 5-on-2 that it kind of worked, because Liverpool were a bit sloppy, and it was almost like United lulled Liverpool into a false sense of security with the second half, with the fact it was so flat. It was almost like it made both teams go a bit flat, and then suddenly United just sprung in life, almost a bit of rope-a-dope to suddenly spring into life and get that goal from Antony. But in terms of the, you know, in terms of the euphoria of the moment, of what it means, of the high it gives everyone, the boost it gives everyone, you really would hope it is a turning point. I mean, in a way, it's a shame there's now no game for 2 weeks, because you really want to go and build on it.
Yeah, you've led me into my next point there. You just must be, if you know, international break players aren't going to be there, but if they were rocking up to Carrington this morning as usual, they'd be thinking, God, we need to get it back out there as soon as possible. We're itching to go again. So in that sense, it is a little bit unfortunate the international break has come at that point. But at the same time, it gives you a great sense of confidence heading into the restart in a couple of weeks. Whereas if they'd lost that game yesterday, they would have been thinking, this is going to be a long fortnight, a lot of negativity around. But Erik ten Hag, before the game in his pre-match interview with MUTV, he said in his own words, this is do or die. It was the game that was going to ultimately make or break United's season. It keeps their hope of a trophy alive. And like you said there, with Fernandes being the prime example of battling through the pain barrier, every single player on that pitch, regardless of the role they played, Harry Maguire, I thought when he came on, was immense. Victor Lindelof put a good shift in. Aaron Wan-Bissaka played very, very well for just the second time at left back after the best part of 2 months out. I think that was a clear performance that suggested Erik ten Hag most certainly has still got the back end of these players, and they're willing to run through a brick wall for him.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I thought that. And to be fair, it's kind of looked that way all season, no matter what we think about Ten Hag and the mistakes he's made and the tactics this season. And like I say, I didn't think it was faultless. I mean, his substitutions were very good yesterday. That was an area he was strong in last year. And yesterday, his subs were really good. And, you know, he cobbled together that extra time team as well as he could. He was quick thinking to do it. But it felt like it was about individuals and extra time rather than a system. And all of those individuals were superb. But they are, you know, they are definitely for playing for him, whichever way it goes. And we've said he's got a lot of credit in the bank from what he did last year, from winning that trophy, from getting United into third. And as we'll come on to, this season suddenly looks immensely salvageable. Kind of trying to step back and take the emotion out of it. There were still issues with that performance. I think that the midfield for a lot of the game was kind of nowhere again. You know, there was that image in the first half that went viral, where United basically had two lines, one near their own goal, one near the opposition goal, and then nothing in between. And things like that has happened a lot all season. And, you know, you said at the start there, the difference winning that game makes compared to losing it, and the momentum they've now got, the buzz they've got over the 2 weeks. I mean, if Antony doesn't score that goal and they lose that game 2-1, although on the face of it, that's not a bad result, I think there'd be so much negativity just because of what happened in the second half. You know, until Antony's goal, they never really looked like scoring, and they did score it, and it changes in an instant like that. You know, the whole mood changes. They finish the 90 minutes really well. They go on and win the game, and now we're all talking about what a moment, what a feel-good moment. You know, had that goal not happened, we'd have been talking about a lifeless second half, and kind of just failing to land a blow on Liverpool. And in the end, it's turned out good. And the difference that makes compared to, you know, given how much was on the line, given the way the season's been going, they needed a moment like that. And it does, you know, it really should give them that momentum to go in and build into and really carry the fight on in this season now, because suddenly, like we said, they do have an awful lot to play for still.
Yeah, they certainly do. And we're going to talk about United's FA Cup adventure and where it goes next and the Premier League top four race a little later on. But I think you've raised a good point there with the image that's been doing the round on social media of the massive gap in the midfield that was non-existent. Kobbie Mainoo yesterday was absolutely outstanding, I thought. And
yeah,
if Gareth Southgate's listening to this, he really needs to get him in that squad for Germany come the summer. There's no way that young man can be playing under 21's football for much longer at that international level. I think there's obviously been a lot of debate about Kobbie Mainoo in terms of what is his best role. Is it the number six? Is it the number eight? I think the way that he progressed the ball yesterday and advanced, making those attacking runs, for me, in my opinion, it's clear he's got a future as a progressive number eight for United in that midfield, provided United can get him a world-class destroyer, similarly in the mould of Rodri across at City, to sort of mop up the danger and certainly not leave United's back line exposed. Do you think Mainoo, looking forward, is that progressive player, the link player between the defence and the attack, rather than just being the sitter? For me, as a number six, he's got far more to offer than just sitting there doing the dirty side of the game.
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. I think Gareth Southgate has said the same. I think after the Nations League draw, he was asked about Kobbie Mainoo, and he said the same thing. I mean, the speed of his feet, absolutely immense. And I noticed it, particularly in the win at Luton as well. I think it was last month now, wasn't it? And there was times there where, you know, it'd be under pressure, and it's one of those where it feels a really small, intense ground, and it just produced three touches and just move away from pressure, move away from Luton players. And he did it again yesterday with some of those dribbles. I mean, he looks such a talent. And I think it was telling that when he came off, you know, when he walked around, when he got back to the technical area, Jurgen Klopp gave him a little high five and, you know, handshake of appreciation. I think that's, you know, that's a manager appreciating what a special talent that player is. But you're right, he is not a holder. I think, you know, if you've got him in that England team alongside Declan Rice, I think the two of them could perform a job like that. They could kind of dovetail. I don't think it works as well with United at the moment. I mean, obviously Casemiro didn't play yesterday. There's question marks over his future. I looked at that midfield of Mainoo, McTominay and Fernandes and thought it looked a risk. I mean, McTominay's having a great season, and he is such a threat in the opposition's penalty area, but he makes such aggressive runs from that central midfield role in terms of like getting into the box and kind of, you know, you see the odd sort of comparison to Lampard, but he's arguably even more attacking than that, because he, you know, he used to play as a striker in the academy, and occasionally he makes those sort of runs, and he's often the highest player there. And too often for me, United get caught with too many midfielders in advance of the ball, basically, or they'll have one midfielder on the ball, the other two in advance, and if they lose it, you know, all three are out of the game and are chasing back. And that's kind of what you see yesterday at times. So I still think that midfield needs some, you know, needs some finessing. I think it probably needs a holder. I think Casemiro has got better as this season's gone on, but I think there's obvious concerns there going forward. McTominay, it's hard to sort of find a role for McTominay. I think he's still a very valuable squad player. You'd still have him in the team occasionally. It worked yesterday, but like I said, I do think I think we all know now he is not a holding midfielder. He is too valuable going forward to just be a holding midfielder. But I do think if he's playing next to Mainoo, it kind of leaves them a little bit exposed in that area. So still not perfect. As well as they kind of played individually as midfielders, that three, there's still a concern there. But I mean, yeah, Kobbie Mainoo was absolutely immense against one of the best teams in the Premier League, and he is, you know, he is such a talent. I don't think United would be too disappointed he's not in the England squad. I wouldn't be surprised if they're hoping he's not in the Euros squad either. And maybe look to get international football next year, because he is still very young. There is still plenty of time for him to go in and influence, you know, influence international football. But he does look, you know, he is the find of the season. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, there's a lot of young players that come through nowadays, and you sort of take a reverse approach, and you sort of say, don't rush them too quickly. Maybe just send them out on loan, see how they get on. But this year, he's the real deal, isn't he? He's absolutely the real deal. He was immense in that game on Sunday. He really was. But speaking of young players and the man who, of course, scored the winner, Ahmad, feels like a very, very big moment for him, very unexpected moment. He's not really had a fair crack of the whip since coming back from injury in December. Obviously, excelled at Sunderland on loan last season with 14 goals. Came back in late December, the very end of December. I think he'd had three substitute appearances prior to Sunday. Then he comes on, scores the goal, gets a very, very harsh red card in the circumstances. I know rules are rules, but what a spoiled sport the ref was with that. But for him, it feels like a potentially breakthrough moment. Hopefully, I know you've done a piece on it this morning yourself, Ty.
Yeah, you know, it's got to be a breakthrough moment for him, really, because it has felt like he's running out of time at United. And I said that I wouldn't be surprised if he was sold this summer, certainly if Ten Hag was still in charge, because that's what we've seen him do with players of that age. Unless you're ready to really be a first-team squad player, you get sold. But maybe Ahmad is. You know, it's been such a strange season for him, just so rarely used. And when he came on, I mean, and it's not just the goal. I thought his all-round performance was really good. Good with the ball, really good off the ball, good pressing, diligent tracking. Even the goal, you know, he was the one that took the ball off Harvey Elliott and kind of started that move. And yeah, it did feel like a big moment for him. He needs to get more chances now. I mean, I said in the piece that obviously, you know, it's a special moment for him. And like I say, the reality is that rule of taking your shirts off is a ridiculous one, really. And especially in that kind of moment, I mean, it's just, it shouldn't be a second booking, but those are the rules. That is the rule. He did know the rule. And now, you know, we've been talking about momentum. He's got it and now suddenly can't play. And what kind of, you know, one of the issues for him is that he's probably competing with Anthony for a place in that side before you get onto Rashford and Garnacho. And Anthony did pretty well as well when he came on. He scored the goal, ended up playing at left back and actually put a real shift in at left back. And now Anthony is available. Anthony can play at Brentford. And you just hope that you know, that red card, although we all kind of like, it's not really been a big issue, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a big talking point. But you just wonder whether he'll look at it and think, oh, I should have kept my shirt on. You know, I shouldn't. And like we say, obviously it's a ridiculous rule, but it is the rule. And you just hope he doesn't watch that Brentford game and see Anthony come on and make another impact. And then suddenly you're thinking, you know, where's he going to get a game from again for the rest of the season? I mean, he has got the versatility to play centrally. I think he could play that Fernandez role when United are pushing for games. I think, you know, he played as a false nine for Sunderland, so he has got the versatility. But you just hope that it doesn't kind of kill the momentum for him, because with that Brentford game, it's going to be 19 days now until he can play at Chelsea. And I think, you know, I don't think he's going to start that game. I think it's going to be back to influencing games off the bench. But it was, you know, I mean, it's whatever happens from here, it's an iconic moment. He's in Manchester United folklore. You know, I mean, I said in that piece, if he hadn't deleted his social media accounts, he'd have a new profile pic this morning. Because it was a truly iconic moment.
It was, and it's probably bagged him cult hero status at Old Trafford forever, to be fair to him. But you've raised a good point there about him and Anthony possibly squabbling over this right wing spot. And of course, a man that we've not mentioned yet on this podcast was Alejandro Garnacho, who started on the right, thought he had a terrific game again, worked himself unbelievably hard. He ran into the ground for United yesterday. It's arguable that he does remain United's first choice right winger. And I did a piece on this literally early Sunday afternoon before the game for Monday morning. So I was thinking that's going to be ruined now. Ahmad, Anthony have both scored. That's messed that up in typical journalistic fashion. But it's arguable that Garnacho, Hoyland and Rashford does remain United's favoured front three, the best front three that Ten Hag has managed to get a tune out of this season. So it's arguable that Garnacho, that Anthony and Ahmad are going to be fighting over essentially the backup right wing role. But you raised a good point about Ahmad being capable of playing inside. I remember Tony Mowbray, who was Sunderland manager last season, he actually said something where he compared Ahmad with Bruno Fernandes in the sense that he could play a similar role. So United have not really got that backup number 10, though. Of course, McTominay is much better going forward. So there could be a way into the team for him there more consistently.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he certainly can play that role. I mean, your problem with kind of being the backup number 10 is that Fernandes is, like you said, he's never injured. So you don't, you know, you're not really needed. But I think he can definitely play. You know, he can play centrally. I don't think there's any doubt about that. There's clearly a very good footballer there. I mean, it kind of remains such a strange story that United just spent so much on him. And as good a young player as he looks, I know he's 21 now, I'm not sure he's ever looked a £37 million winger. You know, he barely played for Atalanta when United signed him. So there is kind of a degree of, you know, I still don't think, there's clearly a good player there. He was excellent for Sunderland in the Championship, but you know, we're talking about one moment. I think he needs a strong finish to the season to make absolutely certain of staying at United next year and not finding himself as one of these young players that Ten Hag cashes in on. And like you say, theoretically, there is competition for those places out wide, but that relies on Anthony kind of kicking on from yesterday, relies on Ahmad kicking on from yesterday. I don't think there's any doubt Garnacho is the first choice right winger at the moment. I mean, I think he started every game since November the 1st now. I think it's 27 games in a row he started. He's getting better and better and better. Played all 120 minutes yesterday. I thought he was superb. You know, he looks the real deal. We're talking about Ahmad and kind of not knowing how much is there and where his ceiling is. Well, we know with Garnacho, his ceiling is stratospheric, really. So, you know, I don't think Ahmad is going to get him out of the team at the moment. I don't think anyone's getting Rashford out of the team. He's not had a great season, but I think he's been gradually getting better and better. And, you know, that was a big goal yesterday because he'd missed two really good chances before then. And okay, the one in the last minute at normal time might have been offside, but the flag didn't go up and he did miss it. So it felt like that was a big goal for him because, again, if United lost that game, it would have been fingers being pointed at missing those two chances. Big moment for Rashford. So, yeah, there are competition for places there. Like I say, I would play him centrally at times. I mean, we're talking about Hoyland still coming back from injury. Obviously, didn't last yesterday and was never going to, but I'd certainly consider Ahmad as an option instead of Hoyland, really, rather than Rashford. And you leave Rashford on the left because he's showing he can play there and he can kind of play it as a false nine, really. He could almost dovetail with Fernandes. So I think there are other ways into the team beyond the right wing for him.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly a headache and a puzzle for Erik ten Hag to try and solve. But that wraps up part one of this episode of the Manchester is Red podcast. Do rejoin us in part two, where we're going to gloss over the Liverpool victory a little bit more and look at what is to come next for United.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to part two of the Manchester is Red podcast. Ty, as we said there, United obviously into the semi-finals of the FA Cup. Their reward for that is Coventry City, the lowest ranked side that are left in the competition. They had their own bit of drama at the weekend, beating Wolves 3-2 in dramatic fashion at Molineux on Saturday. The Sky Blues, of course, as I say, the lowest ranked team left, the only championship club in the hat for the semi-finals. It's probably the draw that most United fans would have liked. Certainly not going to be an easy game. Coventry, no pushovers by any stretch, but this is a golden opportunity, isn't it, to make a second successive FA Cup final?
Yeah, it is. And no, yeah, absolutely no doubt about it. I mean, there feels like there's still a bit of pressure on Ten Hag, and losing to Coventry in the semi-finals is just absolutely unthinkable, really. I mean, they have got to go on and they've got to reach that FA Cup final. And, you know, his cup record is looking pretty good with United. Obviously, two cup finals last year, looking now like another one this year. It is, you know, I think it clearly is the draw that most United fans wanted. I just wonder whether it would have been better to play City in the semis. You know, we're talking about another Manchester Derby cup final being on the cards here, you'd certainly expect City to beat Chelsea. But it feels like there's going to be pressure on in that game again. I mean, you don't want to lose successive Manchester Derby Cup finals. If the unthinkable happens and City are going for the treble again. You know, do United really want to be in that position of being having to try and stop City winning the treble again, of potentially failing to do so again? I'm sure, you know, looking at it rationally, I guess you want the easier semi-final draw and make sure you place in the final. And who knows, maybe Chelsea beat City. But part of me wondered if we're saying you've got to beat City to get to win it, then maybe you'd rather have them in the semi-finals when, you know, they might feel a bit less pressure than the repeat of last year's final. But it is a huge opportunity, and I think they've got to just take care of business first and foremost on the, you know, a month's time, 20th, 21st of April, and make sure they get into that final and then see where they're playing and do what they can at the end of May.
It's a cliche, isn't it, that you've got to beat the best to win any competition. You've got to do that regardless whether it's international football, club football or whatever. But as soon as that draw was made last night, I thought to myself, we're looking at an All-Manchester final again here. So United have got to be happy with facing Coventry, even though Coventry have done a terrific job to get this far. Really impressive run from them. No pushovers, as I say. But an All-Manchester final, like you said, it has the element to put United in a position where they're having to stop a second successive treble from the blue half of the City. So there could be a situation here where United are absolutely rooting for Chelsea, who they probably would have been happy to have faced at the semi-final stage themselves, given that Chelsea are a bit of a hit-and-miss team, very, very nearly blew it against Leicester on Sunday. So United, really, they've got not necessarily a free hit in the semi-finals, but they've got a point now where they've got the opportunity to sort of say, look, we're in this position, we're maybe not the favourites, but we're probably the second favourites now to go the distance.
Yeah, I would think they'd certainly be second favourite given that draw, because they're going to be very strong favourites to get the better of Coventry. And like you say, I mean, it's a huge opportunity for Ten Hag to suddenly reach a second successive cup final. Even if it is City, you know, they have shown they can beat City under Ten Hag. They did win at Old Trafford last year. The cup final last season, you know, it felt closer on paper than it felt on the pitch, to be fair, with a 2-1 scoreline. But, you know, City, cup finals are always difficult, and City weren't great in the Champions League final either last year. If they are in that position of chasing another treble, then I think we'll know they'll be nervous. So there will be possibilities there. It feels like a difficult one for United to go into a second successive Manchester Derby Cup final. And if they stay exactly the same as they were last season, you know, they're going to be really feeling it, because that is, I mean, that's the type of thing you just never live down, to lose two successive Manchester Derby Cup finals. So, you know, maybe they won't lose it. Maybe come May, they'll be in great form. Maybe this run of form will keep going. But you kind of look at what happened at the Etihad recently and at Old Trafford this year. I mean, those two derbies this season have been hopelessly one-sided. And yes, United have had injuries. But, you know, the Etihad team was, I think they were missing three players probably from their strongest 11. And don't get me wrong, two of them, Martinez and Shaw, being so close together on the pitch was clearly an issue. But, you know, over the 180 minutes of derby action this season, it'd be a huge leap of faith to think United could beat City at Wembley in a cup final. But like we say, they're probably going to have to beat them if they want to win it, whether it's semi-final or final. And maybe the final, you know, maybe the final would make City more nervous rather than a semi-final. So, you know, maybe that's the way to go. But I think, you know, it's probably a conversation for another day, because you've got to think United will beat Coventry. I mean, Coventry having a dream run, and the way they beat Wolves. I mean, it was arguably even more incredible than United's game against Liverpool. I mean, the last couple of minutes of injury time was absolutely amazing. So yeah, it'll be an interesting game. Of course, it is narrative heavy with Mark Robbins in charge of Coventry, having scored the goal that, you know, as folklore tells us now, as the fairy tale tells us, saved Fergie's job. I'm not sure it was ever quite that cut and dry in the FA Cup, but that is how the story is now told. So with a certain irony to Ten Hag coming up against Robbins when, you know, Ten Hag is maybe looking at the FA Cup for similar favours this year to try and save his job.
Yeah, quite possibly. And as for the FA Cup, in terms of winning it, say United do go the distance now and do lift that trophy at the end of May at Wembley, I think, in my opinion, it probably would eclipse the Carabao Cup triumph last season. The FA Cup's considered as the more illustrious prize of the two. Obviously, there's the elephant in the room of the top four race, and we're going to touch on that in a little while. United sort of parking that this weekend and just enjoying the FA Cup moment that they had. But I think winning the FA Cup, regardless of if they get in the top four or not, and possibly they might not even need a top four finish for Champions League football next season now, I think winning the FA Cup, would that resemble progress from last season and a step up, even though performances, of course, have not been flamboyant and pleasing on the eye at times. But if you win a trophy, and one as big as the FA Cup, it's a big, big prize to have achieved.
It is, yeah, it is. I mean, I think if they win the FA Cup and finish sixth, I don't know, I'm not sure if I can frame that as an improvement on last season. Maybe it's similar-ish, but you know, they've dropped three places in the league. I think we always felt that they would find it difficult to finish third again, just because we expected certainly Liverpool to be resurgent, probably expected Chelsea to be as well, and that they've clearly definitely not been. I mean, I totally agree with it. If they win the FA Cup, I think it would probably be better than the Carabao Cup, presuming they do have to play City in the final. If they win the FA Cup by beating Liverpool and City, I think you'd have to say that is a phenomenal achievement and a phenomenal cup run. I mean, the Carabao Cup was brilliant last year, but they had home draws all the way apart from a two-legged semi and then beat Newcastle in the final. This year they've had, you know, away draws in the FA Cup. They've found it, you know, harder in terms of the draws, and then they get a home draw and it's against Liverpool. So no, I think they're doing very well to still be in the semis. I think if they win it, it would eclipse the Carabao Cup for sure. It is, you know, it's one of those now where it's like, is the FA Cup enough to save you if the league season is underwhelming? You know, it certainly would have been 15, 20 years ago. These days, it's probably not. You only need to ask Louis van Gaal whether he thinks it is. I think we all know what the answer would be there, because it wasn't enough to save him. But, you know, there's opportunities there for United to make up ground in the league. I mean, we're going to come on to it, but I don't think they should be finishing sixth now. I think really they should be eyeing up at least fifth, if not fourth, but certainly at least fifth. And if they do, you know, if they do stumble again in the league and there's some more underwhelming performances but win the cup, I think that'd be right in the balance for Ten Hag, really, on whether he's done enough. I mean, if they think they win the cup and get fourth or fifth, then definitely you would give him another season. But I think, you know, like we said, their form now in terms of results certainly is pretty good. They're starting to score goals. So I think they've got to be looking at, you know, at getting Champions League football at the very least now, and then hopefully, you know, reach that cup final and then see what comes at the end of May.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And you've actually raised a very good point there about the respective runs that United have had to the semi-finals this season, the final of the League Cup last season. You think back to that run in the Carabao Cup last season, they had home games with the likes of Burnley, Charlton Athletic, no disrespect to those, to obviously lower league opposition. Yes, United played Wigan and Newport in the first couple of rounds of the FA Cup this year, but Forest away was always a potential banana skin. It felt United weren't in the best position at that time and needed a late winner. And then obviously Liverpool, they couldn't really have asked for a harder task with the way Liverpool have been playing in recent weeks. So certainly if United do reach the final and perhaps lift the trophy, you can't say that they've had an easy ride of it. Yes, the first two rounds were plain sailing, grand scheme of things, but beyond that, they've had to fight to get into this position.
Yeah, they definitely have. And even, you know, even the early rounds, I mean, you kind of expect lower league opposition in the early rounds. They were both away. They were both, you know, kind of banana skins, because it didn't feel they were playing very well at the time. Wigan, they made very short work of. Newport, I mean, it briefly threatened to get really embarrassing when they got back, dragged back to 2-2, but you know, since then, like we say, Forest away is pretty tough under a new manager. They did well to grind it out there. And you know, certainly the last half an hour of that game, they played pretty well. It felt again like it was one of those games that was a bit too open, really, for 55, 60 minutes. But they did take control of that. And then, like I said, they got Liverpool. I think if they were to beat City in the cup final, then I think you'd say beating Liverpool and City on the way to winning a cup is a huge, huge achievement. And it kind of shows, you know, it shows the potential that is within that squad if they did pull that off. We're not seeing it enough over the league season, but you know, it is certainly there.
Yeah, it definitely is. And United now obviously one game away from that final, and fingers crossed they can make it. But that does conclude part two of this Manchester is Red podcast. Do rejoin us in part three, where we're gonna have a little look at the top four race, because there was a couple of games in the Premier League of interest over the weekend, and just why fifth place might be enough to get United into the Champions League for next season. Welcome back to part three of the Manchester is Red podcast. We're now going to have a little look at the weekend's action in the Premier League, and it's quite easy to forget that there were a handful of games with all the drama in the FA Cup that took centre stage. Tottenham Hotspur, just a week after blowing Aston Villa away with a 4-0 win at Villa Park with arguably their best performance of the season, produced one of their worst of the season, just 6 days later, in fact, away at Fulham, beaten 3-0, missing out on the chance to move above Villa in the table and into the top four. Ty, that felt incredibly Spursy.
Yeah, it certainly did. It did. Yeah, just very bizarre. Again, when they built up so momentum to go and lose in the manner they did at Fulham was, it was a serious surprise. And I don't think anyone really saw it coming. But, you know, as good as that win against Villa was for Tottenham, it has felt like they've kind of been, I said running out of steam, but they've not been the same Tottenham side that we saw at the start of the season. You know, just trying to live with the one, four of their last nine, I think now. There are signs there that maybe they're just starting to find it a bit harder under Postecoglou. Like I say, it's a very demanding system, so maybe it wouldn't be a huge surprise if they ran out of steam a little bit, although they've not exactly had much cup football this season. But yeah, there's opportunities there for United. I think we said in the past that both Villa and Tottenham, I think, have got much, much tougher run-ins compared to United. And there are signs, you know, there are signs with both that they are not as good as they were at the start of the season. I mean, there was a lot of talk about both in a title challenge, really, in the early weeks of the season. Certainly lasted longer for Villa than Tottenham. But I think both at the moment are starting to throw in some performances and some results that makes you think they're kind of searching for the line at the moment. They're falling over the line rather than going and making sure of top four or top five. And that, you know, that should really give United some encouragement.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Spurs, of course, had a disastrous result, really. Villa's not much better. They weren't beaten, but they did only manage a point away at West Ham. And I say only at West Ham. It's quite hard to believe that West Ham are seventh in the table, only 3 points behind United, because it feels like with the criticism that's been vented at David Moyes this season from some parts, it's felt like they're in a relegation battle for a lot of the season. But West Ham in a respectable seventh. But Villa drew their 1-1 on Sunday afternoon, coming back into the game and getting themselves a point. So they've moved three back in front of Spurs and are now nine in front of United. It's certainly not in United's favour to be 9 points shy of the top four at this stage of the season. They do obviously have a game in hand on Villa now, but it's not an impossible gap to bridge. United, when you look at their remaining games, they have got a lot, certainly on paper, that you would fancy them in. Sheffield United at home to come, Burnley at home, Newcastle at home, not looking as tough as it maybe once did, Bournemouth away. So there are some games in there where United have got to be looking and thinking, if we're serious about this, we've got to get maximum points in each of these games. So 9 point gap with, I think, 10 league games to go for United now. It's not impossible. Yes, they're still fighting an upward curve, but it's certainly possible. And like you said earlier on, the momentum and the guile they're going to have earned from that win on Sunday is only going to help.
Yeah, definitely. It is, like you said, the games are running out. They're probably going to need maybe 8 wins, maybe 7 and a couple of draws. I mean, like I said, both Villa and Tottenham have still got to play City, Liverpool and Arsenal. So they've got a difficult run in. United have still got to play Arsenal. But United, there's no doubt about it, United's running on paper is significantly easier than the other two. And the other two are showing signs of stumbling. I guess the problem for United is that they are as well at times. Certainly that Fulham game, you know, that's such a huge missed opportunity, dropping 3 points at home to Fulham. It's still a possibility. Like we say, fifth might do it. And 6 points, you know, if they won, they'd be about 6 points behind both, I think. So if they won the game in hand, there's opportunities there. Fifth would do it. I don't know if it'd feel like going into Europe via the back door. I think we all know fifth would probably be enough for a Premier League team to get into Europe this year. And it's been competitive up there. But you know, I think they've got to be looking at it and thinking, let's go and win 7 or 8 of these last 10 league games. And you'd like to think that would be enough given the run-in the other sides have got. And I think that's got to be the target now, because the win over Everton last week kind of settled some nerves. Obviously, one of them was always going to drop points. They've both dropped points this week, and when United haven't played in the league. So it does feel like suddenly there's an opportunity there for United to have a real run at getting fourth or fifth.
Definitely. I actually did a piece last week, I think it was, where I looked at a potential scenario that could have happened ahead of the season resuming on March the 30th at Easter weekend, where had Aston Villa won on Sunday and then won on the afternoon of Saturday the 30th ahead of United playing Brentford at 8 o'clock that evening, United could have been as many as 14 points behind Villa if Villa won both of those games. So Villa, of course, have dropped 2 points on Sunday. I think Newcastle is who they play next in their game immediately before United face Brentford. But if that gap had gone to 14, that would have been incredibly hard to claw back. And Tottenham as well, if they'd won both of their games, the gap could have been something like 11 or 12 points. So United really, they got a couple of boosts without even playing a league game at the weekend.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it was an absolutely perfect weekend for them, wasn't it? Maybe aside from that late VAR drama at West Ham. I mean, it feels like these next couple of games are pretty crucial for United. Like I say, I mean, you still look at United at the moment, and I've said this on previous podcasts, the way they're playing, you kind of do fear for them in a lot of games just because of the number of shots and chances they give up. They've got two relatively tricky away games, I guess, coming up. I mean, certainly winnable ones, but Brentford away and Chelsea away are both games you'd think they're not, you know, they're far from a guarantee. Chelsea, we just do not know with Chelsea yesterday. I mean, at the moment, sorry, I mean, their game yesterday just totally summed them up this season. And they're just so inconsistent. Brentford with Tony going to be a threat. I mean, if United were to win both of those, I think it puts them in a great position. They've then got Liverpool again the following week, of course, at home in the league. So I think they'd probably want to win both of those away games ahead of playing Liverpool. Tottenham and Villa have both got winnable home games, I think, on Easter weekend. I think Villa have got Wolves and Tottenham have got Luton. So it does feel like there's a little bit of pressure on United. United will be playing last, I think, as well that weekend compared to the other sides. I think they both play Saturday afternoon. So that week feels like a bit of a big one for United. Brentford away and Chelsea away heading into Liverpool. They need to really kind of keep this momentum going now and keep closing that gap and picking up the wins. And they are, like I say, they're two relatively tricky away games.
Certainly not straightforward, not by any stretch, but Chelsea almost feel like they're a team, though we're not quite at the very, very end of the season, almost like they could be on the beach. Doesn't feel like they've got anything to play for other than reaching that FA Cup final now. Whereas Brentford, of course, so often been a team that have been steady eddies in the Premier League and adapted so well since their promotion a few years ago, are still obviously in the thick of the relegation battle. They're only 4 points above the dotted line at the minute, so they've got a hell of a lot still to play for. So that might be the tougher of the two games. And we all know what happened, of course, at Brentford last season. Obviously, United in a much, much better place now than they were then. And we've got to keep positive on this podcast after what happened on Sunday, so we'll not dwell on that. But United, like you said there, those two away games, Liverpool at home to come at the end of that week after the international break, that feels like that could be a really pivotal week in shaping up this top four battle as we sort of get into the middle of April and then into May, and then obviously the mad dash to the finish line.
Yeah, I think so. And it's certainly one of the tougher weeks United have got left. Like I said, they've still got Arsenal to play, but when you've got Brentford away, Chelsea away, Liverpool at home in the space of essentially a week, 8 days really, 8-9 days, it is a testing week for them. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And if they get out of that with 7 points, I think you'd say that's a pretty good week for them. Liverpool game is going to be an interesting one given what's happened this weekend. And of course the stakes are even higher really for Liverpool in that league game. They're certainly going to be stung from yesterday. You know, as much as we praised United, I thought Liverpool were pretty poor really. And you know, I think we saw from Klopp's post-match antics that they were certainly stung by what unfolded there. So they're going to be up for that one, you'd think. Chelsea, I just find Chelsea so difficult to call. You never know what you're going to get from one day to the next. I mean, United's home performance against them was as good as we've seen, certainly attacking-wise, from United this season. They just absolutely destroyed Chelsea that day and should have won by a lot more than 2-1. But Chelsea have their moments. They look like they're picking up wins and suddenly stringing some form together every now and again. And then they just completely collapse and fall apart. And they're just, you know, they're even doing it within games. I mean, they were in cruise control yesterday and then suddenly they look like they've lost their heads and eventually get back and win it. But only when they, you know, they've booed one of their own players off, and it's so difficult to call. And the Brentford one as well. I mean, like you say, Thomas Frank is still getting a lot of praise. I mean, he seems to be still being mentioned for huge jobs at the moment. Yet, I mean, Brentford are on a really poor run of form. Obviously, having Reguilon sent off so early on Saturday didn't help them, but they've lost 7 of the last 9, I think, or something like that now. They're in a pretty desperate run and heading towards that relegation zone. So there's going to be a lot riding on that game for them. But, you know, I'm with you, I think it certainly feels like a pivotal week. And it feels like a pivotal week, partly because we're talking about the momentum they've built up. If they take 7 points, maybe even 6, but certainly 7 points from that week, you'd say it's still there. if they suddenly go to Brentford and don't win, and they go to Chelsea and don't win, then you're almost saying top four's gone, really. You'd be in a position where you probably need 7 wins from 8 or something like that after that. So, you know, it's a massive week in terms of keeping this momentum going and keeping themselves in that battle.
Yeah, definitely got a spring in this step now, of course. Obviously, he's been forgotten about because of the euphoria that suddenly brought United. Obviously, back-to-back wins now, beating Everton last weekend. Obviously, the performance wasn't quite as enthralling as what happened on Sunday, but they still got the job done and responded to the setback against City the week before. So they do take form into the break. But just lastly, Ty, we did touch on why fifth spot might be good enough for United this season to compete in the Champions League next season. Some people listening might not quite know why that is. But it's obviously because of the format of the Champions League changing next season, and UEFA's coefficiency has sort of said, look, that the best performing teams from whatever country this season will get an extra place. So perhaps because of West Ham beating Freiburg last week in terms of an English team advancing further in the Europa League, David Moyes doing United a potential favour here. It looks like England might get that extra spot in the Champions League over Germany. So United could well get into the Champions League with fifth spot, which makes their form even more important now, knowing that they might get two bites of the cherry rather than one. But that's how it all works now with the UEFA coefficient. And United ultimately have got two chances now to get into the Champions League and compete with the top teams again.
Yeah, absolutely. And while this rule remains in place, I think the Premier League is going to be top five most seasons, because they are quite clearly the strongest league in Europe by quite a distance. And I mean, you look at what West Ham did to Freiburg on Thursday. I know they lost the away leg, but win 5-0 at home, and that was a big swing from the Bundesliga to the Premier League. And you'd expect teams to keep going. I mean, I was having this conversation with a few people over the weekend, but the only team I can see beating City over two legs is Arsenal. Maybe a final, you could see someone beating them over 90 minutes, but you know, I don't see Real Madrid beating City over 90 minutes. I think Arsenal are the only team in the Champions League, over 180, over two legs, Arsenal are the only team that could beat City. Liverpool in the Europa League, you'd think, looking pretty hard to stop. Obviously, Villa still in the Conference League. So I think, you know, you'd probably expect at least one English finalist in the Europa League or the Champions League, if not more. So I think for the foreseeable future, the Premier League is going to be getting five teams in the Champions League, and it does make it easier, and it should make it easier for Manchester United, because if Manchester United don't finish in the top five every season, then it's a bad season. You know, I think in a way it's as simple as that. For a club of the size and stature of Manchester United, they should be finishing in the top five, and that is the challenge for Ten Hag now. He's got two teams to aim at in terms of Villa and Tottenham, both showing signs of not being in the kind of form they were a couple of months ago. So he's got to be going there, because we were discussing his future earlier on, and whatever happens, I think if he doesn't finish in the top five, then whatever you think of the decision or not, I think if he did lose his job, you couldn't have any complaints, because Manchester United just should not be finishing outside of the top five. They should be reaching the Champions League every season if it's going to be a top five, and that is kind of the way it should be going forward, I think.
And ultimately, of course, it is, of course, the way that Sir Jim Ratcliffe wants it. If United don't get in the Champions League next season, it's going to delay his plan. Obviously, the financial revenue that brings, the ability to attract higher calibre players as well. So just lastly, Ty, it is ultimately United need this Champions League spot to progress the club forward as fast as it can.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, I think. I can't remember who it was with on a podcast. And it is kind of like a catch-22 at the moment with the Premier League spending rules, that they are so tight that if you don't get in the Champions League, you don't get the Champions League revenue. You can't afford to spend what you want on players. You can't bridge the gap in terms of the squad, and you miss out again the next year. And it becomes this kind of self-fulfilling prophecy almost, that you need that Champions League revenue. And you look at the accounts that came out last week. I mean, broadcast and match day alone, the difference in the group stage from Europa League to the Champions League was £65 million. You throw in the prize money, hopefully getting into the knockout rounds. It's £100 million swing, I think, from the Europa League to the Champions League. And those sort of fees are astronomical at a time when these spending rules are so tight and so many clubs are kind of struggling to fit within them. So it does feel like there is a lot on the line over the next 10 games, not just for Ten Hag, but for the speed at which United can progress under Sir Jim Ratcliffe.
Most definitely. It's certainly a crucial period in the season, and we'll be across it every step of the way between now and the end of May. But before we go, we just want to alert you to the Pubcast Awards, which are new within Reach PLC. We've launched the Pubcast Awards, which will honour the finest goal scoring Britain's amateur football leagues only. So if you filmed a Sunday morning worldie or a pub team cracker during this season, the 2023-24 campaign, we'd like to see it. The competition is open to all ages and genders in amateur leagues and will close at 6 p.m. on Sunday the 19th of May, which should be around the time the last ball is kicked in the Premier League this season. Once the judges have agreed on a shortlist of the best 10, voting will commence. The three goals with the most votes will receive an engraved trophy and a cash prize. First place will scoop £500, second place £300, and £200 for third. So a good prize on offer there if you've got any worldies that you'd like to share with us. But to enter that competition, you can follow the link in the description or search Pubcast Awards on your chosen search engine. So do check that out. And of course, if you have enjoyed this episode of the Manchester Is Red podcast, be sure to leave us a 5-star review on either your preferred podcast provider or on YouTube as well. You can watch us there. Just search Manchester Is Red and subscribe to the channel. As ever, we'll be back with another episode later this week. So do enjoy the international break, a brief period of respite before the final rush to the finish line. Take care, and we'll see you again very soon.